Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast. It's been a bit since we chatted with you, but I'm here today with my good buddy, Mark, to talk Marvel. How you doing, Mark?
Hello. Great. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah. Had a good time. Played a little Dungeons and Dragons last weekend, man.
A little rusty, but it was a blast, I thought. That was really fun.
I thought it was fun. We'll have to maybe sometime talk about different Dungeons and Dragons podcasts on here because there are some really funny ones out there. But this is not what we talk about here. We talk about comic books and comic book related business for people who maybe don't know as much about comic books, but wish they did. And today we're going to talk Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania because it's coming up.
Yes. Can't wait. 2 weeks.
You got me a ticket already. That was awesome.
I got you a ticket. We're good to go, Joe.
I'm traveling for work that week and my plane lands at 4 o'clock and then straight to the theater.
Zip right to the theater. That's going to be just in the nick of quantum time.
And we'll be at the Alamo Draft House, right?
Alamo. Yeah.
So yeah, all of our listeners,
you tell me if you want me to get you some dinner so you can come in hot, some food.
No, that's an awesome place to see. Did you see Black Panther Wakanda Forever there?
I did.
That was great. Cause they have that pre-show and
I like their pre-shows. They do a good job of history and all that stuff. Yep.
So we got to get there early, 30 minutes early for the pre-show. Exciting.
Definitely.
The last trailers have dropped and there are a couple of characters I think that we want to talk about. Everybody already loves Paul Rudd as Ant-Man. Everybody knows Hope and Cassie and all the main heroes. We're going to talk today about the villains. Kang, yes. Who was introduced in Loki, right? And what was his name in Loki? What did they call him?
He who remains. I rewatched the Loki series about a month ago, Joe, so I'm ready to roll.
I think I might watch it on the plane on the way there and back.
So what's that, a plane? Ready to go. You should.
And then a new character that I don't know how familiar people are with MODOK, but MODOK was a thrill to see in the trailer for those who have been waiting to see how far Marvel can go. And once they went She-Hulk with Porcupine and Man-Bull, you're like, they can do anything.
They can do anything at this point. Absolutely.
And it's been a hot minute since the last Marvel really movie or TV series, right? We had Guardians Christmas Special. We had Werewolf by Night. So it was 2 one-shots. And we had Wakanda Forever.
Yeah, you had Wakanda, but that was, I want to say, November?
Yeah.
Of last year. So it's been a few months. And then you're going to have, I think, a bunch of movies in a row and then nothing for a while, I think.
It's going to be that season, though, again. I'm so excited. But one thing that I just saw today that I thought I'd get your real-time reaction to is it's time to vote. Did you know it's voting season again?
No.
It's they've done it before on Marvel. They're going to put a character on the X-Men team. Not new character. Characters that you may know and or love already or you may not care about at all.
Like in the comics?
Yes. But I want to run through these characters with you real quick.
Ooh,
there's six different characters. One of them will join the X-Men. It's kind of fun online. It's quirky. It's like everybody must vote. And Krakoa is a democracy and we'll have to vote. And then once you vote, you get a little thing that says, I voted in the X-Men election. Krakoa thanks you. So here's the characters that you can vote for, Mark. It is Jubilee.
All right.
You're going to get Jubilee on the X-Men. Juggernaut.
All right.
Prodigy.
Okay.
Frenzy.
Yep.
Dazzler.
Wow.
Or Cannonball. So just a quick rundown. I'm going to take this from Marvel.com. Cannonball is one of the original New Mutants, the second class of students in the Xavier School. Sam Guthrie's come a long way. His ability to transform into a human cannonball, propelling himself with great force at high speeds while making himself, quote, nigh invulnerable, has taken him from a lanky teen to a married father who is a former X-Men and Avenger. Why not rocket him to the front lines again?
Ooh, or cannonball him to the front lines, as it were.
What do you think about Cannonball as a member of the X-Men?
I think that's a really solid choice. It wouldn't be my choice, but I could see it happen because he is a new mutant, and I think he's pretty popular with that group.
Jubilee, I think, gained her most prominence in the 93 X-Men cartoon series, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Joining the X-Men as a teenage runaway, Jubilation Lee. Her name is Jubilation Lee.
Jubilee
for short.
Yeah.
Had been shooting explosive fireworks out of her hands into the face of evil for many years when she lost her powers in M-Day. Gina, she lost her powers.
Right. I do remember that.
That didn't stop her from fighting for right, first as a new warrior using a power suit, and later as a vampire going against every monstrous urge that came with that transformation. Cured of her curse, and with her mutant powers returned, does Jubilee deserve to reclaim her spot on the X team?
I think, yeah, but I kind of have to void it out because she already was an X-Man.
So if you were an X-Men, you're like, you already had your chance.
You already had your chance. You lost your powers in House of M. Start something else.
It's like you got promoted to the major league. You washed out. You got demoted back to the minors. Just find something else. Just
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Bull Durham.
I don't know a ton about Prodigy, and I accidentally just clicked his button. So it disappeared. But here he is. Do you know much about Prodigy?
No.
Prodigy possesses the power of psychomimicry, a form of telepathy that grants him the skills and knowledge of those in his proximity. It allows him equal mastery of any skill, mental or physical, as those around him, and retention of the knowledge he's accessed from those sources combines to make him a formidable mutant, brilliant at biology, computers, martial arts, strategic planning. Like, I want to hire this guy at work. I know. Prodigy may borrow from others, but he is one of a kind.
Isn't that kind of like a weird rogue?
Almost like a... Well, see, I don't think he gets your powers. It's almost like a taskmaster. But yeah, for more than fighting. Like, if he's just near you, he knows all the things you know. Like, yeah, he just hangs out with Neil deGrasse Tyson. He knows all about astronomy and how to ruin movies.
Except for Interstellar. I don't like that power set. It seems a little too out of there, but I don't know.
Well, you've got your choice of Dazzler. Dazzler first made the scene as a pop star, using her secret mutant power to transform sound into light as part of her stage show. Remember those days?
I do.
Becoming a hero and joining the X-Men never dimmed her star power, even as she learned to use her ability to dazzle as an offensive weapon. Since then, she's been a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, a freedom fighter, mother to a time paradox. I'm intrigued. Well, and a vampire hunter. Isn't it time for Alison Blair to reclaim center stage?
She is, I'm going to say, like number two. She'd been my second choice.
Okay. Frenzy, superhuman strength, speed, stamina, agility, reflexes, and durability have made Joanna Cargill a formidable opponent to any who cross her. From her early days opposed to the X-Men as a member of Apocalypse's Alliance of Evil, her time as one of Magneto's acolytes and Mr. Sinister's marauders, to her time on the side of good with Jean Grey School, eventually an intergalactic ambassador's sword, Frenzy has what it takes to tackle anything.
Pass. Hard pass.
I don't know why, anything about Frenzy, except it's, she seems an amalgam of a lot of different things that happened. Like, everybody used to be the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Then they go to Xavier School.
Mm-hmm.
She's, like, been on so many teams already. Seems like she's a job hopper, maybe.
Yeah, not very trustworthy.
And then you've got fan favorite Juggernaut, this non-mutant stepbrother. He's not a mutant. How can he be on the X-Men? This non-mutant stepbrother of Professor X, Kane Marco, long ago claimed the gem of the ancient god Sidorak. Remember the Crimson Bands of Sidorak?
He's got the gem.
Transforming him into the unstoppable brute known as Juggernaut. For many years, he was a thorn in the X-Men's side, frequently rampaging through their lives, leaving wreckage behind. More recently, however, Kane has shaken off the evil influence of her Dark Master, claiming the power of Juggernaut under his own terms and making amends for his past deeds.
Your Dark Master, the Cocoa Bean.
You Juggernaut.
I thought he was a mutant, though.
Last I heard, Juggernaut was cast into, like, basically this pit in Krakoa. I don't know what's going on with Juggernaut either. There's so much X stuff to catch up on. But out of those six, who are you voting for?
Just because there's a lot of callbacks. I mean, I would vote for Juggernaut just because that'd be fun and there'd be some fun storylines there. But Dazzler would be number two for me. Those two. What about you?
Prodigy. My copy of X-Men.
Oh, number that 130, Dazzler?
First appearance of Dazzler in 9.4 condition.
That is excellent, Joe.
So I gotta go Dazzler, because Dazzler, I think of Dazzler's almost like, I don't know if she's that famous in the comics. Maybe she was, but like, it's almost like, what if Beyonce was also a superhero?
Right.
I want to see what they would do with that now that, like, pop stars are a thing. She was just a pop star. I would hope she gets roller skates again. See that. I already did vote for Dazzler. They're telling me to go online and put hashtag X-Men vote and register and show off my voting sticker. I don't know if I'll do that or not. Maybe I will.
Krakoa thanks you.
Maybe I'll put it on my Twitter. So go vote for Juggernaut mark and then put it out there. I'll bet you.
I will.
Juggernaut's an unstoppable force.
He is. I just always liked that part of it.
He is. I always liked him in Marvel Ultimate Alliance. He's tough to beat.
He was.
And then he became an internet meme, and then they wasted him in the X-Men movies until he came back in Deadpool 2,
which was fun. That was fun.
So yep. There you go. X-Men election. Go vote, everybody. You can just go to marvel.com. It popped up to me because I opened up the Marvel Unlimited app today to look at some stuff, and it was like, they have in there, here's a little comic book you might want to read about these characters if you want to know more about them.
Oh. All right, I'm going to vote when we're done with this.
Okay. Vote for Dazzler.
Hey, she was a close second.
All right. So we'll take a quick break. We are already long on time, so let's get to the Ant-Man right after this.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. We could do this all day.
All right, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us on this podcast. We've been talking just some news, but now we're going to dive into the Ant-Mania, Quantumania, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania coming up, and the two antagonists that we know about in the movie so far, Kang and MODOK. So let's start a little bit with Kang. Kang was introduced in the Loki series. They never called him Kang. Like you said, Mark, they called him He Who Remains, which is kind of comic accurate cool, which is that there's lots of Kangs, as we'll get into, because we did read some Kang comic books here. If I can find my notes on this, that would be fantastic.
Avengers 267, 8, and 9.
Yeah, dead on. Written by Roger Stern with pencils by John Buscema. 267 is called Time and Time Again. They all have exclamation points at the end. The Kang Dynasty.
And Kang lives.
The once and future Kang. I like that. The once and future Kang. Good one.
Stop yelling at me, Joe.
But before we kick off the reviews of the, like, what did you kind of know or remember about Kang and his basic powers?
Yeah. Even before Loki, what I remember about Kang is he was a descendant of Reed Richards, lived in the 30th century. I think Nathaniel Richards was his original name, if I remember. That's what I remember about it. And he figured out a way to do time travel, and then he found other alternate timelines. And so he found himself, and then he found good and bad versions of himself. And then he basically just wants to conquer all the timelines. So like that was his goal. That's what I remember from him, from the comics and from the little plastic character that I got. I mean, it was hard to find a character who was purple. So I'm like, it was kind of neat that he was all purple.
Right. He was part of the Secret Wars line of toys.
Yeah.
He was a cool looking dude. I always thought, cause he had like thigh high boots that were purple.
He had the thigh high boots. And then he had the weird mask on him, which they take liberties with in a good way in the trailers for Quantumania with some of his, and then he had all these futuristic weapons, like a personal force field and all these things, all these gadgets.
So I went back to the source. I went back to, for both of these, I went back to the official handbook to the Marvel Universe. And I think a lot has changed in Kang's story in the intervening years, but I love it. I love going back to these. This is real name unknown. Back then, that wasn't part of the Kang lore yet, that he was a descendant of Reed Richards in some way. Occupation, conqueror.
It does say that.
It says right there. Identity, secret. His existence is not known to the general public of Earth, but legal status, citizen of Earth.
Oh.
This is my favorite part. Former aliases, Rama Tut, the Scarlet Centurion. Future aliases, Immortus.
Right. And there was apparently a Kang Easter egg in Moon Knight, Joe. Did you see that?
I did not. What was it?
Yeah. So there's I don't know if you remember the scene where he's fighting somebody that has like a leather jacket on, and on the back of it there's like a purple looking character, and it's Rama Tut. And they were supposed to weave it into the story, actually calling out Rama Tut, but they didn't. But you actually see a couple of screenshots of a purple looking pharaoh in Moon Knight.
I like it.
So there you go. So if you look that up online, you could probably look at those Easter eggs.
I'll just watch it all again and watch for it. By the way, if you're watching Moon Knight, you know the QR code Easter egg, right? Anytime there's a QR code on the screen, if you scan it, you can download a free digital comic.
Oh yeah, that's right.
It's kind of cool.
Yes. Yeah, it's kind of cool. Yeah.
He is also, according to the 6'3", weighs 230 pounds, brown eyes, brown hair, powers. Kang possesses no superhuman physical or mental powers. All of his capacities come from his technology. I would say he's smarter than average. In the TV show, they kind of show he was a scientist too.
Yeah.
But he's not like Reed Richards, Dr. Doom level scientist. He's just got a lot of cool technology that helps him out.
Yeah. But in Loki, they make him out to be a more powerful, not powers, but just a smarter person because he figured out the multiverse.
Yeah. And it's kind of cool because they basically, like, if there were a million versions of you and only the smartest one was left alive, you'd hope that one was pretty smart.
Right. Right.
He's been pruning the timelines for a long time, which gets into this comic that I didn't know when I picked this comic that it was going to sort of tie in so well.
Yeah.
But in this comic, it references that. So it starts with Kang coming back, when he starts, he's not really at the beginning. It's like for some reason, Colossus is getting a Medal of Honor from the president, right?
Yeah, along with Storm, who's an Avenger.
Right. And they're like, man, we're going to welcome this
Russian. You're talking about Avengers 267, by the way. So yeah, so it starts out with Storm as an Avenger along with Colossus, and they're getting a Medal of Honor from President Reagan.
President Reagan. And yep. Tony Stark is still pretending he's not Iron Man. I don't think this is the James Rhodes version of Iron Man, right?
Right. I don't think so either.
But he's like, by the way, my employer, Tony Stark, asked me to give this to you.
Right.
And then out of nowhere, here comes Tony Stark rushing in.
Stop, don't.
Of course. Well, actually, this one, in this version of reality, it blows up. It's a bomb.
It's a nuclear weapon.
It's a nuclear weapon. And it was Kang.
Because back in the 80s, that was a thing. Cold War, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Those were scary times, man.
They were. Reading that comic kind of brought back some of those vibes. That's what I put in my notes. A lot of 80s Cold War stuff kind of coming back. It was a very vivid intro because you're like, wait a minute. Storm isn't an Avenger. Neither is Colossus. What's going on here?
I didn't catch that when I read it.
This was basically an alternate timeline?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you pick up on that right away?
As soon as the nuclear explosion happened, I did. Because I'm like, well, this isn't our timeline.
Right.
But yeah.
But then the Kangs start to get together and there's three kind of Kangs and they're just blasting every other Kang that shows up.
I know. And what I wrote is this had vibes, this particular comic, to the incursion mentioned by Reed Richards in Strange 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I thought it did because they do, the Kangs are talking about this is what happens when you incur yourself into another timeline, like weird stuff starts happening. So when I read this comic, I immediately thought this had to have been some type of source material for Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, which I liked. I thought it was cool.
Yeah. I didn't pick that up. That's a good call out. Do with these three Kangs though, the plot thread becomes very much kind of what you get from Loki, which is there's all these Kangs. Well, they're not fans of each other when they meet each other.
No, they're not. Yeah. They're all scheming and plotting and really want to kill each other. And that's what I wrote in my note. I'm like, I put lazy writing ? Because one of the Kangs showed him all this stuff and then just killed him. I'm like, well, why did you show him all that stuff? Why didn't you just kill him? He's like, well, then I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much.
Right.
I didn't show him all that.
Shows it to him that he's like, hey, you know that girl that you were in love with that is the love of our life and in your timeline she died? Here she is alive. Blast.
Blast, you're dead. And then that's Ravonna, who is mentioned in Loki. She's the judge that Mobius kind of sort of has a thing for. You know that?
My mind. I did not know that.
Yes. Yeah. So in Loki, is it Ravonna or Ravonna? I think it's Ravonna, but I don't know. The in the comics, that's... Ravonna, his lover, is a judge, the African-American female, played great. And at the end of Loki, she, I don't think, knows Kang or He Who Remains at all. She's devoted to the cause. And at the end of Loki, this is why I wanted to rewatch it, she takes a tempad and she leaves. And she says, I'm going to go figure out what's going on, and she don't know where she goes at the end of Loki season one. Whoa. But that's Ravonna. That's
now I gotta go watch that.
Yes, Joe, you do. But she's mentioned in this comic. It's like it helped this comic. These sets of comics you picked are really, really good tie-in. If you want to watch Loki, you want to go to Quantumania, you just want a good, better background. There's a lot of threads in here that just were callbacks for me.
And if you enjoyed Wakanda Forever, Submariner shows up.
Yeah, Avenger 268, Submariner, who apparently, is he an Avenger in this one? He's quite get that.
They're it's almost like they nominated him for Avengerhood, and now there's people protesting outside Avengers Mansion, and some people are like, let him in, and some people are like, no, Submariner, never, he can't be in the Avengers, he's a bad guy.
Right. And then I had never heard of Space Phantom as a villain. Did you even know that was a thing?
It was a hokey one from a long time ago.
maybe I blocked it out.
But not really. So the Avengers are digging a tunnel underground. Do you remember why they're digging this tunnel?
No.
It's funny because Black Knight's the one drilling a tunnel. You're like, what special skills does Dane Whitman, professor of literature, have that he should be doing heavy construction equipment underground? They're trying to build a large tunnel under Avengers Mansion. I assume it's for Avengers reasons. And then they wind up in Limbo. Limbo, they accidentally like hit it. And this is a sort of between world. And then this is what you're talking about. Yeah, it's like all of a sudden there's Hulk. But Hulk's walking around in a daze.
Right.
Then all of a sudden Hulk vanishes and Giant Man shows up. And it's this Space Phantom character that apparently they fought way back in like Avengers number 5 or something.
Right.
And he can swap bodies with people or something. And then when he does, they disappear, and this is where they disappear into, is Limbo. That's like a deep callback for like Avengers 267 to go back 262 issues to get this battle from the Space Phantom.
Yes.
I like it.
And my favorite writing in this Avengers 268 was Namor calling him Krang.
Krang?
Because he's such an arrogant a-hole. He's like, who are you, Krang? Who's Krang?
Who's Krang? I think my favorite
Jarvis to the rescue with coffee and sandwiches.
Jarvis with his coffee. That's what I kind of like about these Marvel comics from back in the day. This is why I liked Vision and Scarlet Witch so much. Is it's the little touches from those comics that just like make them a little more human, like Submariner there. He's like out there, he just catches some lobsters for dinner. Like, sweet, we'll have some lobsters for dinner. And then Captain America, like, you know, Monica Rambeau finally revealing her true name to Captain America. He's like, that's a good sign of trust. She's like, but I'll never tell Namor my real name.
That's right. I'll never tell it.
And they were really trying to, they're really in a pickle with this time thing stuff happening with Space Phantom. And then they do coffee and sandwiches and Jarvis, like he's helping him out. They're like, thanks, Jarvis. This helped us. This will help us figure out what we need to do. And he's like, that's my role to do that.
Right. Jarvis is an all around good dude.
He is a good dude.
And he's a good AI in the Marvel comics or in the MCU.
Yes.
But yeah, so Space Phantom shows up and then they're like, you're going to have to show us how to get around Limbo. And then Kang blasts him. It's like, you're dead, dude. You can't help them out. Which confused me because Kang shows up and he blasts him and he's like all dead and things like that. And Hercules is like, enough of your robots. And he's like, this isn't a robot. It's a hologram. I'm like, but how did the hologram blast him then?
I know. It's a little confusing.
It got very confusing, and it becomes obvious that like Kang's got a really complicated plan here. It's just like, no wonder they always fail. His plan's too complicated.
Yes,
he's got some Kangs. He's like, I'm with these Kangs, and we're gonna destroy all the other Kangs. Then I got the Avengers wandering around Limbo, so I can use them. Then the Dire Wraiths show up, and I had not seen the Dire Wraiths in forever either. And the Dire Wraiths, the only place I've ever seen them appear before is in comic books of Rom Space Knight.
Yes.
They were the bad guys in Rom. Like, again, you guys are...
It was confusing. And it's like, they're always trying to outwit each other and then double cross each other, the Kangs. And it just makes you confused. You're like, you don't need to do that.
Right. It's like he planned too many parts of the plan.
Yes.
Because then the Avengers defeat the Dire Wraiths. Who then Hercules threatens, and he's like something about, you're gonna kill me, and he's like, if you don't show me where Kang's thing is, I might not kill you.
Right.
Hercules, stop the double negatives. But obviously he must have given him good directions, because they end up at Kang's secret lair in Limbo, in this place that's in between worlds.
And which, Joe, see, that's where the seeds of these three comics are, in Loki, Doctor Strange 2, and Quantumania. The secret, mm-hmm. think of what you just said, secret world. It's probably what we believe is in the quantum realm, because he's either stuck or imprisoned there or something.
It's a hidden pocket where people can't find him. That's, I think, or the whole point that is that people can't find, like the Kang who's scheming everything. Nobody knows where he is until he lets them know, because he's in limbo. Not even the other Kangs can find him without him saying, here's where I am.
Right. And that's the He Who Remains in Loki.
Mm-hmm.
He's just sitting there in some decrepit castle. And he's like, I'm just tired. I've been doing this for too long. Like, that's what he's like. He wants somebody else to make the decision. He's like, either Sylvie or Loki, like, either kill me or take over for me. But I'm done.
But is it possible?
I'm done with it. And I'll see you again soon.
So based on the way this all plays out, because you get to Immortus at the end.
Yes.
This all winds up being the scheme of Immortus, who is the future version of Kang.
Yes.
That he's got all the Kangs together, and he seems like he's just a little bit more stable than all the other Kangs.
Yep.
Like,
it's funny that you said that, Joe, because I wrote down in my notes for Avengers 269, Immortus is playing the role of Kang and Loki.
I think so.
I think that's what it is. And it really kind of, this helped you get Kang's backstory in Avengers 269. You get the Egyptian tie-in to Rama Tut.
Yeah.
And you get the Immortus play.
So walk me through what you think Immortus's whole plan is here. So we're skipping ahead to the end of 269, where it is revealed that this is all Immortus's plan with Ravonna.
Yeah.
And she's still in love with Kang, but all the Kangs are just killing each other. And then, like, there's two Kangs left, and she tells the one Kang, there's two of them, and she's like, she lets the Avengers go, kind of. Hercules is like, it looks like he's sweating out of his eyeballs trying to break out of this paralysis.
Right. He uses immense strength to free himself
from a paralysis ray, which frees everybody, including the one Kang that's being held captive. And he grabs his gun. He's like, I'm going to go kill the other Kang. And Ravonna's like, no, don't go kill that Kang. You guys have to stop fighting with each other. And then he goes and tries to blast the other Kang, and his own weapon blows up. And Kang's like, did you not know that I would sabotage your weapon?
Right. The double crossing of the double cross.
Right. That's where Kang's always got one level of a scheme too deep.
I know.
But this is like when we talked about Kang, it's like future alias Immortus. It turns out Immortus was there the whole time with Ravonna. And he's like, I'm just going to prove to you that all these Kangs will ever do is fight each other, because none of them are as enlightened as I get to be 1,000 years from now.
Right.
That's why I have to. And he's like, I'm still not getting, what was his plot all along? Because he didn't want to kill the other Kangs, but he wanted them to kill each other.
Yeah. He was like, I've learned that I don't need to get involved in overly complicated, because all my other Kangs do all that work for me. I just sit back and let it happen. And so that was why I wrote Immortus is playing the role of Kang, because he's like, I need to, in the Loki series, he's pruning all these timelines, because he's like, I need to prune all these other Kangs. I'm the evolved Kang.
Right.
Like, you don't want, I'm Immortus. Like, you don't want these other Kangs mucking around with timelines and going through multiverses, causing incursions, like doing all this stuff.
Right.
And that's what he's trying to explain to Sylvie and Loki. He's like, you need to do this now. I'm done with it. He was he was a retiring Immortus. Like, that's kind of my theory anyway of what he was.
But why did Immortus need the Avengers involved in this at all?
I don't think he did. I think the other Kangs got them evolved, and he's just kind of sitting back and letting it play out. He's like, because this is all, think of like the sacred time. This is all supposed to happen. Like, you're all going to plot against each other. Ravonna's going to come in and save you guys. You're going to defeat Kang again. He lives to fail. Like, so Immortus is above all that.
The last Kang is defeated because Immortus is like, here's a time globe or space globe that has all the memories of every other Kang that you've destroyed. And it's the source of all my power. And so, of course, Kang grabs it. He's like, and I have the source of your power.
Right.
And it's the power being, I can relive all of their lives and know everything they know. And Kang goes insane because he sees it all. And he sees what he says. Immortus says is what he sees is every time his death is a result of basically his own stupidity.
Right.
And he can't handle it.
Yes. And
that is where I didn't realize, like I said, I didn't realize when I picked it, but when I read the last page here of Avengers 269, I was like, this literally is Loki, because Immortus says, understand that as ruler of Limbo, it's my duty to untangle the realities brought about by my divergent counterparts, and it is an onerous and often distasteful duty. I found it preferable to let one Kang eliminate the others rather than intervene directly myself. I have the responsibility to oversee many millennia of time and to maintain the stability of more realities than your minds can imagine.
Yes.
Everything I do is necessary. And like, I'm like, that's exactly what He Who Remains was saying.
Yes, it was. That's why I went, after reading this, I went and watched Loki again.
Yeah.
Because like, I think there's a ton of content they pulled from this.
I'm pumped for it. And I'm surprised that having, you know, as much internet stuff and as much comes out, that nobody was like, hey, if you liked Loki or you were interested in Loki, you should go read these three comic books. Because
and that's what you did. You're doing it, Joe.
I did it by accident.
You did it by accident.
Maybe it's future me made me do it.
Immortus, Joe Immortus.
Joe Mortis.
But I enjoyed it thoroughly. I enjoyed that three comic run. When I was younger, I liked Kang, the idea, but when I was like 12 at the time. I wasn't smart enough to grasp all the multiple timelines. So this run of Avengers, I wasn't interested in. I've got a lot of comics around this, but I don't have these. Because they weren't appealing to me because it was too complicated for me to understand when I was 12.
That's always what I thought about Kang when I was growing up, like 12, 13. I'm like, he looks really cool. I don't get all of this.
Yeah.
Kang.
Multiple timelines, Kang realities. Yeah. I was like, I don't get it. I get the idea he's from the future, like, but they didn't stop there. They would overcomplicate it because that was Kang's thing.
That was Kang's thing. It's always like he's going to make it too complicated for his own good.
I still like the name we're calling him Krang.
Krang. You sure that wasn't just a typo?
Dude, I'm telling you, look it up. It's Avengers.
I'm sure he did.
He called him Krang.
Okay. Namord.
Narmor. But yeah, well,
good
you
one, Kang. Good one, Krang.
Good one, Krang. Yeah, those three comics, I highly recommend people listening to pick those up and read them, especially if you're a fan of Loki and are excited about Quantum Mania.
I 100% agree. Just through sheer luck, I landed on the right three Kang comics to read. If you're a fan of the MCU at all, if you were a fan of Loki and were intrigued by that character, these three comics, I think, will set you up to completely get a different point of view on what's ahead for Kang is a character in the Marvel universe. It's pretty awesome.
I mean, they're gonna have a whole story, like a whole movie called The Kang Dynasty.
I hope, where they're all killing each other.
No, but that's they announced the movie. So I mean, yeah, if you want to get a hold of the next phase, and I think Kang's gonna be the baddie.
Space Phantom's in it.
There's got to be a callback to that. If there is, then Joe, this is an absolute brilliant three comic run that you picked.
It's a home run.
Space Phantom's in there. Yeah,
it's a home run, yeah. Baby. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back to talk about a character that people may know even less about, MODOK, right after this.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. What a revolting development that is.
Thanks for sticking with us, everybody, as we go through the baddies of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, coming to theaters soon, or maybe it already came to theaters, depending on when you're listening to this and which time stream, which variant you are. But we're going to talk. This was, and you only see the character in the trailer for like a quarter of a second. But everybody
like
went
two different times for like a quarter second.
Like MODOK, finally,
he's in it. I didn't even see it until the internet ruined it for me.
MODOK, there he is. Yes. I think the last trailer I saw, the last one, it was a little bit longer shot to make sure that you saw MODOK in it. And MODOK's a weird, fascinating character, because MODOK always looks like he always looked like the least threatening, weirdest villain of all time. When we played Ultimate Alliance, he's a little weird. He looks like a 6-foot potato in a floating chair that's got little tiny scrawny arms and legs.
Yes. That's right. Cause he has a big brain and his body can't support it.
And recently there was a MODOK TV series on Hulu voiced by Patton Oswalt. Did you watch any of the MODOK TV series?
I did not.
I watched some of it. It was very Robot Chicken. So if you're into that kind of, it's all like action figure kind of animated. It was interesting. I got chuckles out of it, but like, I was watching on the treadmill and then I stopped working out. I didn't keep watching it. It's one of those, it's like, it'll take your mind off the treadmill for 30 minutes.
All right. Okay. So, maybe I'll do that.
It's not bad. It's got to be your cup of tea. And you got to be in the mood for just that kind of silly,
right?
Silly, dumb humor with MODOK, and Super Adaptoid is in it too.
Oh, really? I love the Super Adaptoid.
They make a good pair. I'll run you down the official Marvel Hammock. MODOK real name. You recall MODOK's real name?
Yeah, but we're talking about Captain America 132, 133, but MODOK's real name is Mental Organism Designed Only for Killing.
That's what MODOK stands for. Yes. Except when he was MODOC, which I don't remember what it was. Or if you were watching Marvel Superhero Squad, like my yes. kids did when they were tiny, and there's a Valentine's Day episode where his mental organism designed only for kissing.
But didn't they change the killing to something else for that superhero squad?
Maybe. I don't know. Or maybe that was the only one. Mm. Birthplace. Where do you think MODOK was born?
Where do I think he was born? Or where do I know? Because they gave his origin.
He was just a random
AIM character.
No, but like, what city and state is he from?
What, Jersey?
Proud resident of Bangor, Maine.
Really? From Stephen King?
Yeah. Come on. First appearance, Tales of Suspense, number 94.
I did know that. Yep.
Right. MODOK, ruler of AIM. I love here. Unusual features. MODOK's head is of a greater mass than his body, necessitating the use of artificial devices such as a hover chair. Powers, MODOK possesses superhuman mental and psionic powers. He has an organic computer-like brain, which can calculate probabilities, formulate strategies, and solve complex equations. His mind has total recall.
What's Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Although he possesses a genius IQ many times over, MODOK still only has the creative capacity of his former human self.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. He's super smart, but he's not overly creative.
Right. He also has psionic force with concussive blasts. He can increase the motion of molecules in his vicinity, creating heat, form globular fields of psionic force capable of protecting him from the effects of detonation of a small nuclear weapon.
Oh, wow.
I did not know that. And he also read the brain engrams of others, although he cannot read thoughts, which they get into a little bit in this comic, which is interesting. So what we're talking about in this particular section of MODOK are two comic books that we read, which were Captain America 132 and Captain America 133, which were exciting. I never thought of MODOK as a Captain America villain. Did you?
I really didn't, Joe. I mean, when you sent me that and you're like, I think we're going to go with this. But he actually is, when you look up like Marvel fandom, MODOK is most closely affiliated as a villain of Captain America.
It was a surprise to me.
After reading these comics, I understand why now, which we can get to later. But it didn't seem intuitive to me when you first sent it, but now it makes sense, now that you know more of his origin.
And the cover of Captain America 132 has like Bucky standing with a rock waiting to bash in Captain. And I didn't even see MODOK on the cover. I'm like, why is this a MODOK comic? MODOK's just tiny in the corner watching this all happen on TV. And I love the first page. They must have just put exclamation points on everything. This is the fearful secret of Bucky Barnes in this epic issue, exposed at last, the most diabolical plot of all time. Thank you, Stan Lee. This is story by Stan Lee, illustrations by Gene Colan.
Bucky so reunited.
Cap and Bucky are reunited. It starts with Baron Strucker getting taken to prison, and Cap and Bucky's just recently returned because Bucky was dead. And Bucky was never coming back. Bucky was dead for a long time, but here he is, and they're on TV.
He hasn't aged a day.
Right?
It's like Lord of the Rings. Bilbo Baggins, you haven't aged a day. Gandalf?
They're trying to, there's all this paparazzi there, too. And they're trying to get pictures, and Captain America's like, I don't have time for it. And I love it because he's like, we got to go. And they're like, okay, Captain, how about giving us a few action shots first? And he turns around and goes, sure, boys, you can snap Buck and me as we go charging away, which is his nice way of saying, take a picture of my ass, dude.
That's right. That's what I thought of, like, America's ass from the Avengers Endgame. Fanboy Falcon has FOMO with Bucky back on the scene, I wrote down.
Right. Walter Cronkite's on the TV.
As it was, as it is, as it always shall be.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, but, you know, Falcon's kind of sitting there and he's like full costume. He's got Red Wing with him. And he's like, man, I thought me and Captain America made a pretty good team, but now he's got Bucky back. This kind of sucks.
Yeah. So you felt a little bad for him, but you kind of were like, I don't know if this is going to last. Like that's there was a bit of, I don't know if it would call it foreshadowing, but a bit of just skepticism that you had when you're like, what? And then they show you the AIM has a, I would call it a cameo with AIM. And the master of AIM, and then it's MODOK who's a scientific creation of AIM. So they kind of they allude to the background of him right at the very beginning.
Right. And the AIM costumes are not the ones that I'm familiar or I'm used to. These AIM costumes are white and purple.
Yeah, I thought they were yellow when I in my head, right? Are you that what you're
I always
thinking?
Did. I always thought they were yellow also, but in this comic they're white and purple.
Yeah, they must have changed them later.
I think so.
I think these are the version one. I think it was the away unis. I think yellow are the home.
The home and
home
away
jerseys.
Oh well, they're home here. So maybe these are the home.
Oh, maybe these are the home. Yeah, that's right. Because whenever they attack, maybe those are the yellow are their away jersey.
When they pee their pants when they see that's bad right. guys, it doesn't that's right. stain.
That's right. And then, much to my surprise, after MODOK monologues to set everything up. Over monologues, because apparently he's not a very creative person. He reaches out to Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom, yes.
There's a lot of cameos in this one book, is what I wrote. Oh my gosh, you had Bucky, you've got Falcon, you've got AIM, you've got MODOK. Now you've got Dr. Doom.
And Doom's not the brightest bulb in this comic.
No, he gets pretty easily duped by reverse psychology.
It is. It's like almost immediate reverse psychology, where MODOK wants a life replica of Bucky. And how he gets it, he goes to Dr. Doom and he's like, I challenge you to do this and it's so hard, you'll never be able to do it no matter how hard you try. And Dr. Doom's like, oh yeah, watch me do it then.
Doom's response is typical, which is amazing. Like, you can't tell me what to do. And then he challenges him to I bet you can't do this. Oh yeah, watch me. Here, you can have it. He is. He's brilliant, but he got caught up in the reverse psychology dupe to build a Bucky bot.
And maybe this goes back to where it says he's super smart, but doesn't have any of his creativity, or he has the normal creativity because he's super smart, but he couldn't build a life replica of Bucky that would trick Captain America because he just didn't have that sort of ingenuity it takes to be an engineer like Dr. Doom does.
Right. I agree. He can't build it, but he can think of the, I guess, idea to build it. I don't even know.
Yeah.
And then towards the end of this comic, 132, I got some MCU vibes here with Cap fighting Bucky, like with Winter Soldier, and they made him too perfect, right? They gave him too many memories of Bucky, and Cap, like in the movie, he was unwilling to fight him. He's like, I'm not going to take you down. Like, I know you. And so these memories actually hurt his prime directive programming and kind of over circuitry him or whatever. I don't even know what you would call it.
He's like, I must kill you, but I cannot. Because Cap wouldn't fight back because he was guilty. He's like, I caused your death once. I'm not going to fight you and hurt you again.
Right.
The robot Bucky was so much like Bucky that it chose to not kill Captain America.
Yeah, he was about to kill him. And then the implanted memories of the bromance with Cap conflict the android. And
I like how he's riding behind Captain America on the motorcycle and he's like, Bucky, you're gripping me kind of too tightly back there.
You really strong grip. He got here. It's like, couldn't he have just snapped his neck? Like, why did he have to fight him? But you're right. So that was the end of 132. And that
my other favorite part of 132 is Batroc the Leaper shows up.
Yes.
And if you look at the panel, Captain kicks him right in the junk.
That's why the book is so great. There's tons of cameos in here. Batroc is like awesome in the movies. And he's awesome in this, except when he gets kicked in the balls.
Porcupine's in it.
Yep.
That's amazing.
There's a lot of, it was a good book. It was a good one, Joe. It was really good.
So the Bucky bot sacrifices himself, which then triggers you into 133, which is now the second part of MODOK's brilliant scheme. Right.
Real quick to wrap up 132, I was going to say, it's kind of a sad ending because Bucky dies in front of Cap twice.
Right.
It really, they really talk about the mental anguish that that he could probably experience. Like, that's really sad.
Yeah.
Actually, at the end, I'm like, wow, that's kind of a heavy, that's something that when you're 13 or 12, you don't pick up on. But this time around, you're like, wow, that's really rough for him.
It is.
So anyway, I just wanted to wrap. I was wrapping up 132. And then go ahead, 133.
133 then is like a new MODOK scene. But this is one where you really get MODOK's origin.
Yes, yes.
They go back and they retell it that he's just some random AIM henchman. Right. They're like, we're going to do an experiment on you.
And that's where you learn more about understanding, like, he's a human rocket raccoon is what I wrote down. Constant experimentation and suffering. Like, that's what he is. He's a normal agent thrown into an alteration chamber to expand his intelligence, and then he turns into this grotesque physical monstrosity.
Right. And he's like deformed and hideous, and you know, he can't live a normal life. They've made him more powerful than ever, so he's going to wreak havoc, and that's his axe to grind with Captain America.
Yes.
Is it Captain America? Right. Is like had experiments done on him, but turned into a super good looking dude.
Right. And his failure from his last issue feeds his thirst for revenge and hatred towards Cap even more. Like, that's where you better understand, based on his origin, why he's a Captain America villain. Mm-hmm. Like you said, he's this perfect Captain America, and this guy is a grotesque version of him.
Right. So he has taken over AIM, like basically killing everybody who did all this to him. He takes over AIM, and now he's running AIM.
He has a new plot of creating Bulldozer Man.
Bulldozer, who's this weird, like, giant stone golem. I like how AIM also has a jet that says AIM on the wings really big.
He's like, we're gonna send this out and bamboozle people. But I'm like, but it says AIM on the plane. Like, right. I didn't think you wanted that. Didn't you want to be a little more clandestine than that?
Well, like, it's an unidentified aircraft, except that it says AIM on it really big.
Well, that's for the reader. They want to make sure you know that
it's in pink, though. It's in pink.
Wait, and I want to know, we didn't say it yet, because I love the acronyms in Marvel. What is I know this. I want to see if you remembered. What does AIM stand for?
It's like advanced something mechanics, right?
Yes, advanced idea mechanics.
Advanced idea mechanics. Now, didn't they already use that in the MCU for whatever?
For Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
Not Justin Hammer. Guy Pierce, whatever his name was. But yeah, Advanced Idea Mechanics. Yep.
But was it was that what his company was called? Or did they make
it? Was. No, it was his. He came up with Extremis, and his company was called Advanced Idea Mechanics. Yep.
This is where I'm hearing rumors that they're going to radically change MODOK's origin. So I'm not super thrilled with what I'm hearing, but I'll stick it out and see if they're true or not.
Well, I want to know what you heard, because I heard something too. So you go first.
I heard that this is at the end of Ant-Man, when Yellow Jacket shrunk down super tiny.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. And then it, like, his head didn't quite shrink in the same proportion as his body.
Right.
And then he's been living in the quantum realm and has created all this stuff.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know if I mean, it would be an interesting callback. It's just, this is where you and I know too much about comics, where you're like, is that really? I don't really like that.
Seems like they're wasting all of AIM. It seems like a good way to bring MODOK back, if you want to, is to tie him back into AIM, of after the events of Iron Man 3, like, all these people are going to be unemployed, basically, right? Because Guy Pierce's character, whoever he is, ran the company to the ground, and then these scientists go underground, keep the name AIM, and do crazy experiments and come up with MODOK.
Yep. But it would be a better MCU tie-in for what you and I heard about Yellow Jacket.
It would be.
I just don't know. And it would be interesting is he an ally of Kang's, or is he part of the quantum friends of what's her bucket?
Janet Van Dyne.
Thank you.
That's right. I don't know.
We'll find out. Yeah, I heard that too. It'll be interesting to see if that's true. So then he creates Bulldozer Man, and he has a more elaborate plot, right? He wants to have Bulldozer Man befriend locals,
right,
and have them turn against Cap.
Right. In the inner city. They pull over their airplane jet somewhere, probably not very close to the inner city. It's probably hard to land a plane there. And they just kind of kick him to the curb. They just kind of open up the hood. They're like, get out.
Get out. Go do your job.
Yeah.
Here's your recording.
It's an interesting
tape.
plot as they go into disadvantaged neighborhoods. And he's got these pre-recorded tapes that as he's wrecking stuff up, he's like saying, I'm doing this for the people.
Yeah. Which, again, this is, again, another thing when you're younger versus now, I really actually like the humanitarian angle they're putting here of nobody's helping the slums. So MODOK is actually making it look like, hey, he's coming in and bulldozing the slums and maybe we can build new, better buildings around the slums.
Right. And he's like, see, they've got this pre-recorded tape that's saying, I'm doing this for the people. I'm doing this for to help the oppressed.
Right. And then the weirdest line in this book, while he's fighting bulldozer, Captain says, I've an Avengers priority. What does that mean? Your Avengers priority.
I've an Avengers. Trust me. I've got an idea. Don't just stand there. I've an Avengers priority.
Yeah. What?
I don't know.
What does that mean? Okay.
But it turns out
something else is going on. Oh, good.
Yeah. This is a brilliant plot by MODOK at this point.
It is.
Unlike
good.
Kang, where Kang's overly complicated for doing good. He's got this robot out there doing this. And he's like, basically, no matter what Captain America does, if he fights this thing and destroys it, all the people are going to hate him because they love this robot that's wrecking up the abandoned buildings and stuff.
Yep.
And if he does nothing, the police are going to hate him. So in one way, Captain America's going to lose half of his fan base.
Yes. Yes. And so it is a brilliant plan. And he feels like he's going to succeed on his plan. But Cap asks, again, another cameo in this book, Tony Stark for help.
Once again, just like MODOK had a problem, outsourced it.
Yep.
Cap's like, Tony.
He's like, oh, yeah, you got Victor Von Doom. I've got Tony Stank.
He didn't have to pull a reverse switcheroo psychology on him. He just asked him to do it.
He didn't. He just asked him to create a device to reverse the commands of MODOK.
I think it was to awesome. Help him track where the MODOK was. Like,
yes,
if there's a signal coming to this robot from MODOK, I need this thing that'll track the signal back.
Right.
So I can find I can find MODOK. And MODOK's like in a church because he's like, no one will look here for the leader of AIM.
That's right. It's like, damn, it's Sunday.
That's the creativity gap.
That's right. And then as he's destroying the slums, Cap, again, this is what you love about him, he's ultimate do-gooder. He says, quote, they need a chance, not chaos.
Right.
It's like he always knows what to say and when to say it. He's so great at that.
I love it. It's good. It's classic Captain America action.
It is.
They need a chance, not chaos builders, not destroyers. But then he dives at MODOK and MODOK flies away. He's like, ah, I forgot. He has jets in his chair.
I know. Dang it. I forgot about that.
Can't you forget? And I like the way MODOK's illustrated at the end that he's like flying away so fast. It's like hair is blowing in the breeze. I know.
Well, he's not the very most creative person. He didn't make himself very aerodynamic, Joe, but
then MODOK gets trapped at the end and the whole building collapses on him. He's like, I'm trapped. And they're like, Matt, good, whatever.
It's like, we're just going to go over here and continue on with our lives. But the greatest thing about 133 is, okay, Bucky might have died in 132, but this is the seeds of a beautiful partnership between Cap and Falcon.
Yeah. I think I accidentally stumbled on another, like, important moment in Marvel history, because this seems to be the moment where Captain America and Falcon really become that team that we know that they become.
Yes. And you think of the mental anguish at the end of the last book.
Mm-hmm.
He needs Falcon as much as Falcon needs Cap.
Yeah.
So it was a really good ending, Joe. Well done. I think you had a couple of bangers in these sets.
That makes up for some of the other ones we read, but all right.
No, they were good.
So awesome. Thumbs up on Captain America 132 and 133. Also, for anybody interested in MODOK, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back to wrap it up and chat with you in a moment.
Oh, my stars and garters. You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast.
All right, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us through our podcast on Kang and MODOK, the semi-stars of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. A couple of great series we read today. Avengers 267 through 269. If you want to know a little bit more about Kang and some of the stuff that's going on with him and Immortus that may tie into the MCU, and then Captain America 132, 133, a little bit of MODOK, who I don't know if he's going to be huge in the movie, but people are curious about him. And then you get to little Cap and Falcon action, which you always got to love. So which of the two was your favorite, Mark?
I'm going to definitely, they were excellent. Both two thumbs up, four stars, whatever you want to call it. But the Avengers 267, 8, and 9, I would say I got a lot of strong vibes of source material for Loki, Kang, and hopefully Kang Dynasty, future MCU stuff. So if you like that, I would go that route. Although 132 and 133 Captain America are definitely pickups. But if you have to pick, I would do the former.
I agree. So consensus there. So we're going to see Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania here in a couple weeks. What are you expecting for the movie? What are you hoping for?
I really hope that they keep some of the humor. I don't think his what was the name of his security company? I don't think those characters are going to be in it much or at all, which is going to be a little disappointing.
Right.
I think it's going to be more set mostly in the quantum realm. But I love Paul Rudd as Ant-Man. I think while he doesn't have, I mean, he's got the Ant-Man suit. I think what they talk about is his, you know, we're talking about creativity with MODOK. I think his creativity will help win the day. Like he is very thoughtful and comes up with like the time heist. He was the one that came up with it.
Right.
He comes up with the idea of reversing the polarity on his suit, like when he was stuck in the quantum realm and came out. And right. He always comes up with the right answer eventually, and hopefully that helps here. It might end on a sad note, though. I don't know. I've heard there might be some deaths in the movie also. I'm not going to spoil anything of what I've heard, but I hope it makes me laugh. And I just think I'm looking forward to an enjoyable movie because both Ant-Man movies were just very enjoyable. So I'm just looking forward to that.
I agree. Ant-Man's always injected a little levity into the Marvel universe. So I'm looking forward to that too. You know, it'll be sad if characters pass away. You know, these are characters I've gotten used to and that I like, you know. I think it's been interesting to me because I didn't know what to make of it when they announced Ant-Man Scott Lang instead of Ant-Man Hank Pym. I think that was absolutely the right call.
Yes.
Because you get past some just oddball things, and Scott Lang, you just get into a little bit more wisecracking, a little bit more stealth, a little bit more everyman than the super genius. And he's just smart enough, and it's more clever than smart. He comes up with unique solutions.
Clever's a good word. Yeah, I agree. And they can always dip back into the Hank Pym canon in MCU if they wanted to, because there's a whole history there of him and his and Janet Van Dyne.
I like it. And you know, I think they're setting up Cassie too as that next young Avengers type, where you're starting to see some of the younger heroes that will be that next generation into the next phase of the Marvel universe with Kate Bishop. And you know, in the comics, that character is like really taken off in a big way too, which I appreciate. And so I'm looking forward to seeing yet a third member of the family don the I wonder if she'll have more Wasp powers, more Ant-Man powers, but definitely. And man, that scene where he is like falling apart, there's like an Ant-Man falling apart, and then there's multiple that gave me like Scarlet Witch vibes. Like that'll be interesting, because now that they've cracked open the door, it's like almost kind of anybody who does die, it's like you've opened this multiverse door now too,
right?
Where until you get to the end of, I think, this phase, I don't know that you can assume anybody's end is permanent until you get to the end of this phase.
I agree. We'll have to definitely do a podcast talking about it once it comes out and we watch it.
100%. All right, well, thanks for joining me today, Mark. Thanks for listening, everybody. So excited that you joined us again, and we will talk with you soon. We'll do a little DC podcast. Jeff and I have been reading the Batman One Bad Day series, and then he and I will need to catch up on this James Gunn news. And then Mark and I will probably be back next time with You Hear From Us will be our Ant-Man review. So
yes,
looking forward to it. Cheers, everybody.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic book you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter at Casual Comics Guy, at our blog, CasualComicsGuide.com, or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.